the Age of Vision radio show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. From 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV radio, we relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision radio show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Vision radio show. Thank you for joining us. Today is June 7th, 2018. It's 8 o'clock in the morning here in Eugene, Oregon. We want to thank you for joining us. Thank you, KEPW.org, for carrying our radio show. That's 97.3 here in the Lane County area. So we want to thank you very much. I am super excited about our guest today. We have with us Mr. Tom Carpenter, Executive Director of Hanford Challenge. He is really the definitive source on what is going on at Hanford. So thank you, Mr. Carpenter, for joining us. Really appreciate it.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
It's really great. So one of the things I asked you about, and I have been drumming this into my listeners' head, is this thing that I call the proximity factor, how close the Columbia Generating Station is to Hanford. Am I correct at being completely freaked out over how close that is? Like, I believe we need to close CGS right away if we want to prevent a worldwide catastrophe.
Well, maybe we should start with saying the Hanford nuclear site is the nation's most contaminated nuclear waste site, and actually most contaminated facility in the nation. So it's there because the United States government decided to make plutonium for our nuclear weapons arsenal starting in World War II, and in the process of doing that, making that plutonium, created this massively highly contaminated site in southeastern Washington State, right near the Oregon border. And you're right, also on Hanford's land, leased to a utility, is the Columbia Generating Station, which is an operating nuclear reactor, the Northwest's only operating nuclear reactor. And this is a reactor that's older, has definitely had performance problems and safety issues in the past. And, you know, an accident at CGS, at that station, or an accident at Hanford that has an airborne release, for instance, of radionuclides, both of which are definitely scenarios that are on the table, and in terms of being possible, they would synergistically affect each other. So you could certainly imagine a scenario where, if you couldn't get to the controls of the Columbia Generating Station because of an earthquake, because of an accident or whatever, then we know what happens because of Fukushima, and vice versa. If there's an accident at the Columbia Generating Station, then everyone at the Hanford site within the tank farms and all the buildings with the very, very large inventories of very dangerous, highly radioactive waste, they couldn't also, you know, maintain, you know, the levels of hydrogen gas inside those tanks. And, you know, you've got a big accident waiting to happen there.
Wow.
So, yeah, there's definitely one has to do with the other, and the proximity effect is very dangerous. And I'll also just point out here that not that far upstream from the Hanford site are a series of dams. The closest one is Priest Rapids Dam. Recently, it was found to have a lot of cracks in it. And only a year ago, they found a bunch of cracks in the Wanapum Dam. So, you know, a dam failure is certainly a failure mode for a nuclear site.
What would happen? I had never heard of that.
So, it's a massive amount of water behind these dams. You know, they would come rushing down the Columbia River Basin. It would take not that long for it to get to the Hanford site. The Hanford site would flood. To what degree depends on the time of year and how much water is behind the dam, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, this is what happened at Fukushima is, you know, a tsunami, earthquake, tsunami, a flood. The power was cut off and the three reactors melted down. And they're still trying to recover from that accident, although it's really an ongoing accident at Fukushima. So it's at Hanford, it's not only that, but all these underground nuclear waste tanks, if the flood levels got that high, could, you know, potentially flood those tanks with water, which is a very bad idea, because all that water would help to mobilize all that waste in these tanks. They're just incredibly high inventories of radioactive material. We're talking plutonium, cesium-137, strontium-90 in these tanks. But these are elements that are dangerous at microscopic levels. I mean, literally, you know, the threshold of harm for plutonium inhalation is so small as to be any exposure is considered.
Isn't it like 1/32nd of a millionth of a gram or something infinitesimally small?
Yeah, it lasts so long. So the half-life of plutonium is 24,000 years. It takes 10 half-lives for it to be gone. So that's, you know, 250,000 years. Having this material free in the environment, in the food supply, in the water supply, in the air, in plants, et cetera, it would circulate through the environment throughout its half-life and throughout its 10 half-lives and cause damage all the way through. So this is very important that the government get on top of, or we get on top of, making sure that these vast inventories of radioactive waste are secured and that they're disposed of properly. And we have very little time to do that.
Yeah, very little. I mean, that is actually, what were they thinking? I mean, you've been around these nuclear people all of your career. What are they thinking? Like, why did they fight? Why are they fighting in court? Why don't they just say, I mean, why don't they admit the harm that's being caused and put their shoulder to the wheel and say, okay, let's lean in and figure out how to resolve this situation?
Well, I mean, part of it is, number one is there are plenty of folks at the Hanford site who are doing exactly that. But they fight the system that's put in place that denies the harm because of fear of liability, for instance. It's also a system that it's basically run on money, right? So Congress allocates about $2.3 billion a year to the Hanford site, and they don't see much progress happening. And neither do I. A lot of that money is spent simply safeguarding the waste that's there. Like almost $600 million a year goes to what's called MinSafe, minimum safety. And that goes into maintaining those high-level nuclear waste tanks, assuring that the hydrogen gas levels.
Why is it so much? What did they do to spend that money? Where does it go?
It's expensive. They've got a workforce of some 9,000 people. You can't get close to, you know, these tanks. You have to be on top of them. You can't directly interact with this waste because it's so radioactive.
So you have to build robots.
You have to do everything remotely anyway. So it's just very tricky. This is outside of the experience of humans, right? Most of our history is to deal with something like radioactive waste and materials that can, you know, that put out so much energy in such a short amount of time that it makes you sick and kills you, within minutes or days or hours, right? Depending on the source of the radionuclides, and that's radiation poisoning. Or if you inhale particles or are exposed, it can cause cancer in 20 or 30 years down the road, and that's well acknowledged. So, you know, Hanford workers, I mean, this is a sick, sick workforce. Mm-hmm. We have spent, as taxpayers, $1.5 billion on worker compensation for over 5,000 workers at the Hanford site.
Wow.
And it's just the beginning. This is like a big wave of sick workers coming down the pike at us. There's a lot of claims being filed. And it just illustrates the danger of these materials. And to get back to your question, Hanford was born in secrecy. It was born in the Manhattan Project, which was the big project to build nuclear weapons during World War II. And then after Hanford made the plutonium that was used in the bomb dropped on Nagasaki, it went on to operate 9 reactors, 5 big reprocessing facilities, hundreds of other buildings in support of refining the plutonium, et cetera, et cetera. And it created this giant mess. That was all done in utter secrecy. Even though the site is within Washington State, no Washington State inspector was allowed onto the site. It was a federal enclave. It was national security. And even when, you know, finally Washington managed to get a group of scientists from the University of Washington to act on their behalf to start testing the Columbia River and local environs around the Hanford site, they had to have clearances, and their studies were classified. They later became declassified. But at the time, they were advocating, this is in the 50s and 60s, that the Columbia River be closed to all fishing and hunting far downstream because it had turned, Hanford had turned the Columbia River into the most radioactive river in the world. And that's saying something, as powerful and as big as that river is. That river is powering many, many turbines of dams, wow, right? I mean, it's just a massive river.
Do you think it's safe to go in?
Today, yeah. Back in the day of operations, absolutely not. And we don't know about the future because very large inventories of radioactive materials currently stored on the Hanford site or in the groundwater are subject to leaching into the river at some point, and maybe not that far along. So studies by Hanford has shown that without, you know, very vigorous cleanup efforts, the levels of plutonium along the shoreline of the Hanford site would be hundreds of times higher than the current permissible levels for exposure to plutonium in under 400 years. We think those studies are optimistic. It'll happen much sooner. It'll be much higher levels. And our notion of what is an acceptable level of exposure to plutonium is certainly going to be different for, you know, children, pregnant women, other vulnerable populations. There's already, you know, people militating that these standards need to be more strict than they are. Mm-hmm. So anyway, we've got this opportunity as a society to get, you know, to start controlling Hanford's worst radionuclides. to take them out of these underground tanks where they're currently stored, some 56 million gallons of high-level radioactive waste. This is the worst waste on the planet. It's the most dangerous stuff ever created by humans. And, you know, it's dangerous in microscopic quantities. It lasts forever. It's volatile. It can, you know, it creates hydrogen gas, which can catch on fire or explode. You know, this stuff is very dangerous, and yet these tanks were built in the 40s and 50s, most of them.
Oh, God.
They're single-shell tanks. They're falling to pieces. A third of those tanks have failed and leaked well over a million gallons, some say as much as 6 to 10 million gallons of radioactive waste into the soils and groundwater below those tanks. And everyone knows that the effort needs to be remove the waste from those tanks, treat that waste, and the preferred method is to mix it with glass, and bury that glassified waste in a deep geological repository, you know, a mile underground, below the water tables, because that's really all you can do. You can't neutralize the waste, you can't burn it, you can't put acid on it, make it go away. Nuclear waste is an element. It's, you know, atomic radionuclides and et cetera. Those are, that's the building blocks of everything, right? So it has to decay away at its own rate of speed. And in some cases, you know, that's thousands of years or hundreds of thousands of years or even millions of years. So all this waste in these tanks needs to be removed. Now, there has been a consensus in our community, and when I say community, I mean the Northwest community, for a good 20 years now, that the waste in the tanks is acknowledged to be high-level waste. There's laws that apply that that this waste is on a track to be removed from the tanks, vitrified, and stored underground. However, currently, you know, the Trump administration has come into office. They're looking at the price tag of the Hanford site going, wow, there's way too much money going into this. And overall, this project...
Are you kidding?
Tens of millions and tens of billions of dollars over the next few years. So how can we save money on that? Right?
What?
So there's a new proposal by the Trump administration to not clean up all the waste in the tanks, to not remove the waste from the tanks, all of the waste, and to use a little trick and say, well, it's not high-level waste anymore, it's low-level waste, which would enable them to, you know, put concrete on top of the waste and walk away and say, we're done. You know, this would destroy any notion of cleanup at the Hanford site if they get away with this.
I wonder how they could do that.
Proposal.
Didn't that's exactly what they did in the Marshall Islands? But guess what? The Marshall Islands concrete dome is crumbling. It didn't last as long as they already. So why are they proposing something that's already failed?
And
you know what's amazing?
Their science doesn't hold up. They know it, right? You know, cement.
Well, it is Rick Perry running the energy. It's Rick Perry running the energy department. He doesn't understand science. I mean,
they're hot about a science in a way.
This right? is my question. As you were talking about the levels of waste and how it happened and really the complexity of like how extreme this site is, in my head I was thinking, why isn't this, what keeps our government from declaring this a national security emergency and pouring? However, it sounds like they're not paying enough. This is why it's not getting cleaned up, penny wise and pound foolish. Yes, it's expensive. It is extremely expensive, but we have to pay for it. And we have to double down on what we've been paying for, it sounds like.
Double down is right.
It's not that
cleanup budget by twice as much as what it is.
At least,
When people look at the price tag for cleanup, there's definitely sticker shock. It's like, holy cow, that's a lot of money. However, keep in mind what the United States taxpayer shelled out to make nuclear weapons. You know what that price tag is in today's dollars? about $9 trillion
what?
To make nuclear weapons. And a lot of that was Hanford. So when we're looking at price tags of, $100 billion to $200 billion or even $300 billion to clean up the Hanford site, that's small compared
that's
to
kind
what,
of what
we
I
were
was
willing
thinking.
To shell out.
As you were describing the level of waste and the complexity of it all and how it all, I mean, I've had many guests come on here, but as you were explaining it, this is why I've driven from Eugene to Portland three times to go watch you speak, because you explain it in a way that makes it, for me, a person who, I admittedly, non-scientific brain, I operate intuitively, you know what I mean? I'm really good at reading literature and geography, all that other stuff, but science stuff, I go haywire. So I need to understand it in simpler terms. And honestly, as you were explaining it, I'm thinking, why aren't we spending whatever it takes to fix this? Because if we fix it, the whole nuclear industry could get healthier, because while they're fixing it, they're going to be making new discoveries in an urgent time frame, and more, that's when discoveries happen. I honestly believe that with the nuclear process, we need to stop expanding nuclear and free scientists from corporate control and stop making it a for-profit business. Like, we need to just let them go after the problem. This is a national security emergency. That's in my view. I believe it's a national security emergency, just like building the weapon was.
Right. If it isn't now, it will be, when they have a significant accident. They come really close. Like, so last year, they had a collapse of a radioactive waste tunnel called the Purex Tunnel. This happened in May, April, May of last year. Just one day, there's this gaping hole in the earth on the Hanford site, and it turned out that one of their big tunnels that they had just shoved a bunch of radioactively contaminated train cars into, that were full of radioactive and chemical waste. That was built in the 50s. They used wooden beams to make this tunnel. And not surprisingly, because, they had numerous scientific and technical analysis of the tunnel over time, there were warnings and warnings and warnings saying this tunnel is going to fail. This tunnel is going to fail. You're down to 10%, or whatever it is of the integrity. And sure enough, then one day something caused the part of the tunnel to collapse. And fortunately, it was not a windy day. A lot of the soil fell on top of what was in the tunnel. So there was not a significant release of airborne radionuclides.
So, Mr. Carpenter, I have to ask you this.
Yeah.
When all these warnings, this is where I, as an American, am like, this is what I told Jeff Merkley's office. At what point do our elected officials stand up and go get the national security, the National Guard, and say, we're asserting our rights? Like, when the NRC kept giving them, I covered this when it happened last year. I read Susanna Frame's articles on air. I looked on the, I went to the Hanford, I mean, I read all their stuff on air. What they tell us on Hanford.gov is shocking. Like, they have the audacity to say, oh, we've spilled a million gallons of radioactive waste. That, to me, when I read that, I was like, this is a national emergency. This is not something we need to take lightly. And
I totally agree.
What keeps our elected officials from having that position? Like, I've seen Patty Murray, who I know she was very instrumental in getting Hanford deemed a national monument because she said her dad worked there. So,
right.
But why doesn't she view this as a national emergency?
It's an odd thing, because Eastern Washington is a poor part of the state. It's got agriculture, and that's about it. There's vineyards, and then there's Hanford. It is the economic bright spot for that part of the state. It's got great paying jobs. It's employing 9,000 people directly.
We can still have that.
And, and thousands of other people indirectly, you know.
I get that, but I'm not, look, we're going to have many more people there working. We could have an economic boom on remediation. We need to have, like, we need to end, or maybe complete, maybe not end the Manhattan Project, but I've been saying I think we need to end the Manhattan Project, because this secrecy around nuclear has got to end. We've got to stop acting like we're scared of it, because it's our reality. It is here. We have got to face this, and we cannot be afraid of our future.
Right. One of our, one thing that I've long advocated for and thought is that, you know, the agency that was created to make nuclear weapons and nuclear weapons material, which is the Department of Energy, used to be called the Atomic Energy Agency, is the wrong entity to be conducting a cleanup. They've got a cultural mindset of secrecy. One of the things that our organization does is represents whistleblowers at the site, and I've done this for years and years, decades, and since 1985, starting with our first whistleblower on the site. And since then, hundreds of whistleblowers have come forward. Most of them have been fired, their careers ruined. Sometimes we get justice for them in the courts, and get them money or get them reinstated, only to have them fired again and fired again. So, but you know, this is the mindset out there. Is, you know, one of the jokes we have around the office is at Hanford, no good deed goes unpunished. People who are doing us all a favor by pointing out safety problems and nuclear waste problems and violations of law and fraud, they're the ones who get fired, and the people who commit the criminal acts, who commit the fraud, who commit the unsafe acts and harass these people, they get bonuses. They get empowered. You know, just by way of one example, one of the companies out there, CH2 Imhill, pled guilty to a series of felonies, committing fraud, had to pay $18.5 million civil penalty for time
fraud. Of what?
Time card fraud. So they were stealing the money from the government on trumped up charges and pocketing that money. And, you know, they paid $18.5 million civil penalty, settled a bunch of criminal allegations as well. Now, you would think that a company like that would have been fired. They're still out there. And it's the same company that just last year irradiated at least 42 workers because they couldn't take the time and the trouble to protect these workers against plutonium exposure as they open-air demolished the plutonium finishing plant.
Where is Patty Murray and Maria Cantwell? Those are citizens of her state, of their states. So where are their elected officials with the outrage? This is the thing that I like, the cult, the secrecy surrounding the Manhattan Project. Why do we even have so-called whistleblowers in an industry where people are just attempting to keep the planet safe, not their company safe? We're talking, this is a grave, serious matter that is being neglected. And where is Patty Murray? And I mean, this is what I said to Jeff Merkley's office and to Pete DeFazio, like, and I'm going back, we're going to keep making appointments, because this cultural shift, I'm not about chopping off their heads, though. See, I think we need a peace and reconciliation council. Mark Rabinowitz was on my radio show last week, Monday, and he mentioned this, and I think this is a great idea. He used this term, and he made the comparison to Rwanda, where you have all the people come forward who have been involved in perpetrating the demand for secrecy. And they come forward and they say all the lies that they've done. And then we allow them to figure out some way to pay retribution, you know what I mean, or do the restitution to the community. But they don't go to jail. They're not demonized. They can come and live in the world. We get to go, hey, we were all part of the Manhattan Project. Very misled project, but let's come clean, and no more suing, spending times in the court. Let's just like put all of our money into figuring out this grave problem for humanity. It's a huge issue.
It is a huge issue, and it's much bigger than most people think. I mean, just to kind of illustrate, 40 acres of the Hanford site a few years back got shut down because fruit flies had landed on a radioactive surface. It was happened to be Hanford had painted something that was radioactive with a fruit-based paint for the dye of the paint. Well, obviously this attracted fruit flies and gnats, and some of these gnats and fruit flies landed on this paint, collected some radioactive material on their legs. Now think about how big a fruit fly is, right? You can barely see them.
Wow.
Right? And then flew over and landed on workers' cars, their lunches, other buildings. This was so severe of a contamination incident that they closed 40 acres of the Hanford site. They had to decontaminate lunchrooms, spray down cars. And, this is beyond, again, the human kin, the comprehension of humans, to think about something so small creating such a big problem. We're used to being able to taste trouble or smell trouble or see trouble, right? I mean, this is, if you eat something and tastes bad or smells bad, this is how you know not to eat it.
That's why they don't test. That's why they don't do studies. Because John Goffman told us a long time ago, Dr. Arthur Tamplin and Linus Pauling told us a long time ago, this stuff is bad for humans. It is not. We need to study this science before we use it. That was their recommendation.
That's right. And then the a worker in 1972 walked into the Hanford site. This was reported in the New York Times, and set off all the radiation alarms walking into the site. So those alarm portals are to catch people who might have been contaminated on the site who are attempting to leave, and the radiation monitors would say, hey, wait a second, stop. Let's decontaminate you and, send you through all the testing. Well, this guy walked into the site, and they said, wait, where have you been? But it took them a while to figure out that the guy had eaten oyster stew from Willapa Bay oysters. Willapa Bay is a famous, place at the tip of the Columbia River, at the mouth of the Columbia there. There's this peninsula that goes that goes along the shoreline, and there's these famous tidal bays, and those oysters had been contaminated, and clams had been contaminated with zinc 65, a radionuclide that came from the Hanford site. And so all he did was eat a single can of this stuff, which was enough to set off the radiation alarms.
What year was that?
That was in 1972.
Wow.
Again, classified. They didn't talk to anyone about it, et cetera. But it did get noticed and printed in the New York Times in the mid-1980s then. And I still have that article around. There are so many stories like that associated with Hanford, each of which, some are slightly humorous and some are terrible. Just terrible, but all of which kind of, indicate we have got a big, big problem at the Hanford site, which people who work around it day in, day out, tend to become inured to it, right? They,
they get
coal
numb.
Miners are used to black lung. People in Libby, Montana were used to asbestos, because they mined asbestos there. At textile factories, brown lung was another thing. It's just like, well, everyone has it, and you can't really do anything about it, so it's just the way it is. Mix that with the pride and the stories they tell themselves of, we kept America safe. We built the weaponry that ended the World War II.
Yeah.
That's what they say to themselves.
And we're spending our careers cleaning up.
Historically, that's not quite accurate anymore. That's still what they believe, and they'll never let that go. So, you know, they consider themselves true patriots, and that, you know, did this war effort thing and et cetera. And I'm not going to take that away from them if that's what they want to. But, you know, what it does do is, you know, A, put blinders on them about, you know, when the bombs were dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, 80% of those killed were women and children and old people. They were non-combatants. The war was over. The Japanese had already, you know, offered terms of surrender, which were pretty unconditional, which we turned down. They wanted to keep their emperor. Well, after we dropped the bombs, they surrendered again on the same terms, and the United States accepted those terms. So historians now accept, based on decoded cables and, you know, unclassified information, et cetera, that the reason we dropped those bombs on Japan was to have a display of might to the Soviet Union, which was planning on invading Japan and taking a piece of the credit for ending that war. And we wanted to stop them. So we sacrificed hundreds of thousands of Japanese citizens, non-combatants, for this political point that we made. And it was not necessary. But, you know, that's kind of where Hanford started. I'm not blaming the people at the Hanford site, you know, for doing that. Those were political decisions made at, you know, very high levels of the military. But it went on then, Hanford, to build all these more, you know, new reactors. And, you know, they created some 65 metric tons of plutonium. It only takes about 8 pounds of plutonium to make a nuclear bomb. So this giant arsenal of nuclear weapons was created out of Hanford's work. Ironically now, we are faced at Hanford with a true threat to this country, to this region, because all of this stuff is in a volatile condition, and leakage of this material into our waterways and into our food supply and crops and whatnot is, as you say, it's a national security issue.
I don't understand why we are not pouring more money into it then. That's the thing. Why are we cutting money? Why are we not, like, recognizing? Why are they the proof is in the pudding. We've had enough years of seeing people get sick. All, as you say, it's the tidal wave of workers coming, right? And so, but the question is, why are we ashamed of
Congress?
But why
Congress
are we ashamed
to do that,
of that,
right? And so, you know, Congress is looking at a budget, and they say, well, that's a lot of money. They should be able to do that. And, you know, frankly, they're saying to themselves, we've put over, you know, $22 billion into trying to do something about those underground nuclear waste tanks. And not one teaspoon of radioactive waste has been treated, you know, and disposed of properly. Probably $50 billion has been spent on Hanford cleanup altogether since 1989. And so Congress is saying, we're doing our part, you know, but this money is getting wasted. It's being stolen by contractors, and there's no accountability. Whistleblowers get fired for, you know, pointing out this fraud. Nothing happens to the companies that, or to the managers, frankly, that fire these people. Those companies keep their contracts. They get bonuses. You know, that CH2M Hill.
Well, that's the NRC's fault, though, for allowing that. The NRC has responsibility.
No, DOE.
DOE. So that's what I'm saying. Somewhere in our government, the people handing out those dollars have a responsibility to make those corporations. See, we don't have the luxury of withholding funds on this project. Because if we withhold funds, these projects, we are going to have a catastrophe. We are going to be wholly unprepared for what is about to happen.
That's when the money will flow. When we'll put a lot of money into, locking the
post-catastrophe
door after the horse is bolted, right?
it's almost as if they think this is kind of like a hurricane, right? So those poor people down in Puerto Rico, they're basically the people in Puerto Rico are really being starved. You know, they're being really led on. They're given nothing. They're on their own. They've had a major catastrophe. In Hanford, we do not have that option. Hanford is if we starve that beast, it will grow exponentially.
Yeah, we'll be sorry. There's no question about that. And we are keeping it at a minimum safe level. Hanford has evaded the catastrophe. But here's
what's
happening.
That's what I'm saying. It doesn't make sense to me. On one hand, they evacuate the space for a few little fruit flies. They're completely compliant with that. But with this idea of holding themselves accountable at a corporate level to do the best you can without ripping off the government because they know you're going to need billions more. The idea is not to rip off the government, but to do your work so well they want to pour money into your pockets. And, I mean, imagine how the community of Richland, that area, could really grow. You think it's a booming community now. What if we tripled the size of the contracts, you know, the amount of money that we went into that, to really take this seriously?
Unfortunately, I don't think that would do it.
God.
And not just because, not because the amount of money would not be sufficient, but because the, you know, right now Hanford is in thrall to these contractors with names like CH2M Hill, Bechtel, WRPS, and there's, you know, the situation with the government oversight, the Department of Energy, and these contractors is they're very, very close. You know, they are buddies. There's not an arm's length relationship between these contractors and the personnel who work for the federal government, whose job it is, you know, to oversee their work. So here's how it works, right? You're a government engineer or a scientist or a bureaucrat. Your job is to, you know, oversee the contractors to make sure they're doing their jobs correctly. They're spending the money right, they're meeting their deadlines, they're running the plant, you know, in a manner that's compliant with the laws, that blah, 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 protecting workers. You're paid $65,000 to $90,000 a year. That's the government pay. After 20 to 25 years, you get to retire on a government pension. You know, but your counterparts that work for the contractors are making twice to five times that amount. I'm serious. I mean, a lot of these...
Why?
A lot of these engineers and scientists, well, that's just how it works. So they hire these contractors and to attract, you know, these scientists and engineers and others to come from around the country to live in, you know, a community like Richland, which is not a city. You know, it is a small town. It's off the beaten path. You know, there's no big plays there. There's, you know, there's not much there. I can well understand how most people would want to work, you know, in a Seattle or a Chicago or a New York and, you know, have access to, you know, good restaurants and entertainment and the best that American, you know, society can offer, as opposed to, you know, a small burg like the Tri-Cities, which has gotten better, by the way. But, you know, it's hard to get people to work out there, so they offer these big salaries. Well, these federal agents, when they retire, they don't just quit working. They go to work for these contractors. And
then
suddenly they're making thousands of dollars a day as consultants. Yeah. And, you know, this is something Ralph Nader calls the deferred bribe, where federal overseers, you know, if they behave themselves, if they're reasonable, with quotes around that, right, and they cut the contractors a break, then, you know, at the end of their shift, at the end of their, you know, when they retire, there's a nice man there with a big check in his hand, offering you lots more checks like that to help them evade government oversight, you know, and to explain to their counterparts up and coming in the bureaucracy, this is how you make $8,000 a day, like me. And which is be reasonable with the contractors. That's how they couch it. You know, don't give them a hard time.
Well, why can't the government pay our contractors $8,000 a day if that's what it's worth? I mean,
who cares?
Why do we have to lie about it? Why do we have to hire people that will lie for contractors to bilk the government? Why can't we just pay our contractors, the people that work for us, our scientists who work there, to be honest and give them a good salary? I mean, it has actually, in the last few weeks, really hit me. Like, this, we need to not run from this. We need to face it and create a science around it. It is its own deal. It's an industry that is waiting to be built, but it can't be built on lies and graft and deception.
Right. And
there's
right.
real science.
And injured workers. So the workers.
Yeah, and injured workers. Yeah.
They are taking it in the teeth.
Yeah.
So, you know, just last year, there were three plutonium exposures that happened
right.
where, you know, as they ripped down this plutonium finishing plant, the contractor, you know, promised and promised and promised that they would keep workers safe. And they had a zone set up that, you know, on the outside of the zone, don't worry about it. You don't have to wear, you know, any type of respiratory equipment or, you know, no masks, no clothing.
That's ridiculous.
On this side of the tape, you're okay. On the other side of the tape...
Like the safe side of the fence. Have you seen that documentary?
Right, right. On the other side of the tape, then you do have to wear all that stuff.
Right.
Well, in January of 2017, they blew out their zones, and plutonium contamination was found on the fences and on workers' clothing and that kind of thing. That was a wake-up call. They stopped work for a little while and said, okay, we're better at it now. You know, we've got it won't happen again. In May, they had another incident, but this time much more serious, and 32 workers were found to have internal contamination of plutonium in their bodies.
Oh my goodness.
It's probably more than that because they didn't test every worker. They waited to test these workers for weeks afterwards when they should have tested them within the first 2 days. And they didn't
Why did they do that?
Tests on workers because they don't want to know. They don't want to, you know, have to admit. They didn't even want to do the bioassays in the first place.
I'm telling you.
In fact, it was Hanford Challenge and Susanna Frame that first reported on these incidents.
Wow.
Right? And, you know,
they weren't even
going to admit it. Workers called us up and said, hey, did you know there's a take cover at the plutonium finishing plant? What the hell's going on? And so we tweeted about that. And the Department of Energy actually responded to our tweets by saying, there's no emergency. There's no take cover. You know, you guys are making stuff up.
Wow.
Know, and, I mean, it was just, then within a few days, you were like, oh, yeah, okay, yeah. You know, and as the news came out, well, that wasn't enough. Those 32 workers at that point, or 31 workers who were found with contamination in them, into December. They shut it down. Then they restarted again. Happened again in December, where, you know, once again, plutonium dust clouds left the area. This time it contaminated workers' vehicles. And they didn't notice. The site management did not notice. Some of these cars got driven home into the communities with plutonium contamination on them. How do we know this? Hanford Challenge took some car filters from people's vehicles and tested them and found americium and plutonium in those car filters.
Wow.
And it's just, and DOE is like, well, I guess, you know, they really, it's just amazing how this contractor, you know, so your assumption now is, well, they were heavily punished, right? No, they just got a $10 million bonus fee. That's right, just last week. So the contractor, far from being punished for it, is getting paid extra money. And it's like, well, shoot, maybe if they had contaminated another 40 or 50 people, they would have gotten even a bigger bonus. I don't know.
Well, the way their payment structure is set up, they're incentivized to lie and cheat. The way the structure is set up, they're not being paid for quality. They're being paid for deadline dates, meeting deadline dates.
You know, for in 2017, for 42 workers, to have internal plutonium depositions in their bodies is inexcusable. I mean, where on the planet is this happening besides Hanford, right? Maybe it's happening in China. You know, we're not being told about it or something like that. But, man, not in the United States. We're supposed to be better than that. We're supposed to be preventing that. And here's what DOE has said, or the contractors have said, oh, it's only plutonium. It's not that much. It's like, you know, a chest x-ray. It's like, wrong. It's a cancer-causing substance. Exposure of any amount of plutonium is unacceptable and carries with it a health risk that we cannot quantify on a person-by-person basis. But they're telling people it's really okay. It doesn't matter
we
that
we've
contaminated
lethal.
These people with plutonium. Yeah.
We know it's so lethal.
This is how Hanford's response to it. It's like, oh, never mind. We contaminate people with plutonium, but it doesn't matter. And so it just makes me sick to my stomach that these people are in charge of this cleanup, and it has to change. The Department of Energy ought to be taken out of the role of overseeing this cleanup. The contractors who bilk the public through time card fraud, through failing to do protect its workforce, through breaking the laws, they should not be working there. You know, there needs to be a different system put in place whose main purpose is the safe and effective cleanup of the Hanford site in a manner that's going to get the job done in a timely manner.
Do you know a company to recommend?
Well, I think almost any company could do it if you held them accountable. And that's what's missing, is there's no accountability.
So it's not the contractors ripping off the government. It's the government saying, hey, rip us off.
Contractors do that. You give them a chance, they will do it. But if you actually hold them accountable for doing it, and you fire those contractors, you imprison those managers and the people who did it, you know, that sends a strong message. You don't give them the opportunity to do it. And that's what's happening right now, is this lack of accountability, this permissiveness, permissiveness to go out there and fail and steal money and commit fraud and to contaminate workers with no accountability. That is what needs to change. So despite everything I just told you, there's been no hearings in Congress about these 42 workers getting contaminated or about the contractor getting bonuses for this. Or about the tunnel collapse, for that matter, you know, or about the fact that the Department of Energy now wants to abandon untreated high-level nuclear waste in the tanks at the Hanford site, which is the latest proposal by the Department of Energy. They put this out on June 4th, just a couple of days ago, on Monday. This is their new plan, is let's not clean it up, let's just leave it there in the tanks. That would be sacrificing the health and safety and long-term, generational health of the entire Northwest by abandoning this long-lived waste in a zone, in a geography, riddled with earthquake faults, a major river system, volcanoes, and periodic geological flooding from ice ages. Materials that last millions of years, you know, basically left behind at Hanford. That was never the deal. The law is supposed to protect us against that, but this is their proposal, and they'll do it if they get half a chance.
This is the thing I don't understand about the Department of Energy. Why? Well, I mean, I actually found a scientific study that I read on my YouTube channel. It was done in 2013 by a set of six scientists. It was a peer-reviewed scientific journal. That it was, I think the title of it was Testing the Validity of the Safety Culture Model of the IAEA, which is basically the safety culture model at all nuclear facilities. Mm-hmm. These people discovered it had never empirically been tested.
Right.
How is that the culture? This is what I mean. We need to end the Manhattan Project secrecy, and we need truth and reconciliation councils. We need people to be able to come forward and say, we just didn't understand. You know what I mean? Like, There are people making financial decisions about the health of the entire planet.
That's right.
At a certain point, we need to figure out a way to end this. It's complete insanity.
Well, you know, you bring up that safety culture, and there's a nuclear safety culture paradigm. Hanford has been tested for that over and over and over again and has failed pretty miserably, all those tests.
That, you know, these scientists did find a nuclear power plant to test the safety culture model. It had 8 markers of safety. 7 of them failed. One of them failed. One of them passed 50%.
Wow.
this is why we have such a bad situation.
Here's how it translates. When some years ago, I went out to the Hanford site and noticed high radiation levels pouring out of a building that was in a publicly accessible area of the Hanford site, in what's called the 300 area. You know, we looked inside, saw these yellow and black boxes marked in reactor fuel behind glass. So, you know, if I were a bad guy, I could have broken the glass and gotten off with some in reactor fuel. And the levels of radiation coming through that window were, you know, it's like a chest x-ray an hour. It's like 25, 2 chest x-rays an hour, 25 millirem an hour, which is emergency dose. And, you know, I called the site manager who, you know, said, oh, we'll get around to looking at that. Clearly wasn't intending to. A week later, I went back. Nothing had been done. So, you know, I called a TV news station. And, you know, they helicoptered in reporters, and we spent an hour on that site, walking around, filming it, you know, showing the radiation levels before, you know, finally someone said, hey, what are you guys doing here? Oh, you shouldn't probably be here. You should probably leave. And it wasn't off-limits property. It wasn't like we were, you know, behind the
barricades. Unprotected site, yeah.
So then they cared. Right? Only because they got exposed.
You're right. The CHN2 Hill is incompetent. But the question is, or how do we make them accountable? Because there's people that work for them. I mean,
it's the government that needs to hold them accountable, not just CH2M Hill.
Who do we contact?
So really, it's, you know, all of your congressional representatives ought to be hearing loud and clear that the Hanford cleanup is broken, and it's because the system is broken, and that the Department of Energy ought not to be in charge of that cleanup. There needs to be a new agency whose job it is to oversee the cleanup at the Hanford site and other sites like it. Department of Energy is done with this facility. They shouldn't be there anymore. We need an agency whose pure purpose is the cleanup of the Hanford site, that in a manner that's compliant with the law, that's subject to external regulation from the state of Washington, from the state of Oregon, from the EPA, from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, to assure that all the laws are being followed, penalties applied as necessary, and, you know, that an agency that has a control board with major stakeholders, including...
Mr. Carpenter, I have to jump in. We have 20 seconds. I hope in a couple months when my show gets resettled, you will come back and we can talk specifically about this. You've been listening to Tom Carpenter of the Hanford Challenge. Thank you, UCY-TV. We're going to miss you. Thank you, KEPW 97.3 in Eugene, Oregon. Put your courage beyond, you guys. Take care. Thank you, Mr. Carpenter.
Yeah.